Got everybody? I want to call the Customer Service and Operations Committee to order. Agenda's before us. Are there any questions regarding the agenda?
No.
Hearing no objection, the agenda's approved. We have the minutes of September 12th. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Motion's made. Is there a second? Second's made. All those in favor?
Aye.
And those opposed? Thank you very much. Today we have two items that are before us. Following the Silver Line marketing plan review of last month, we will receive an update on the new 7,000 series cars given by Mr. Troop. Also, that's very important before us. Staff has returned with the new Title VI definitions that require board approval. Staff has done a great deal of work on these since September's committee meeting. They've already consulted with the JCC, the FTA, Civil Rights Team, and concluded public outreach and research, surveyed 15 peer transit agencies. Mr. Jim Nguyen and Cheryl McCann are here to walk us through the work and discuss the recommendations for change. Okay, Ms. Nguyen.
Good afternoon. As was stated, I'll be joined in this presentation by Jim Hughes and Sean Cannon. Last month, the committee requested additional clarity on Title VI definitions for the board consideration. Those requests centered on the following items. Number one, to fine-tune when a major service change would be initiated. This has been completed, and Jim Hughes will take you through the applicable charts on that. We will also ask to look at other transit agencies' disparate impact and disproportionate burden thresholds. We included in your mailout a listing of those agencies and their respective thresholds. I'm obviously partial to the work we have completed, but I believe our thresholds better focus on the true intent of Title VI, which is to ensure fair and equal access for minorities and low-income population. Equally important, our thresholds allow us to address Metro's complex multimodal system. We were also asked to look at jurisdictional partners, and for the most part, our partners are awaiting us, and we will work with them as we get through this process. Lastly, we were asked to talk to the FTA. On September 27, Catherine Pett, Deborah Corum, Kristen Haldeman, and myself visited the FTA. We sent them an advanced copy of our thresholds and our definitions. We had an hour conversation with them, a good back and forth with them. They came out with two suggestions, which we have incorporated into our process. I will tell you this. After they looked at the intricacies of the way we do our process, they were very much impressed with that. It appeared to be new to them that we, in fact, look at the actual by-trip data, which really pinpoints and defines who is at a station, who is riding a bus. That would seem to be a very selling point for them. At this point, I'll turn it over to Jim Hughes, who will take you through the major service change methodology.
Hold questions until the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. As you know, we've always had regulations on the bus side. Today I'm going to cover both Metro Bus and Metro Rail regulations. I'll start with Metro Bus. We've always had regulations on the Metro Bus side as to when we require a public hearing for reductions of service. So we've modeled this definition, the Title VI definition, after those, and also included some for when we add service in just the mirror respect. So for the bus side, we have three parameters: span of service, frequency of service, and coverage and availability. And we took, as I said, presently we have, if we reduce span of service by more than an hour on a bus line, we're required by our own regulations to have a public hearing. So we're now saying if that gets invoked, either 1 hour less of service or 1 hour more of service. Now we'll kick off the analysis for the Title VI equity analysis. Similarly, for frequency, we've always had a reduction analysis. We're now saying if it's reduced by 20% or increased by 20%, it then kicks in the Title VI analysis. And coverage and availability, again, it's just the mirror of image, so that if we are either reducing service to more than 15% in a fiscal year, or if we're increasing it more than a fiscal year, we will do the analysis and bring it to the board. So it's just sort of a mirror image on the bus side of what we've used for quite some time. Now I'll talk a little bit about bus, and there's two slides on bus, again, three parameters. We really don't have a board adopted policy for service reductions. We went to the public and we've asked them their thoughts, and we wanted to keep it simple, and we wanted to sort of mirror board policies and what we do on bus. So we started with PAN. There's three of them. First one is span of service. If we change the span of service more than the board, away from what the board has already adopted, then we will do the analysis. I say bus, I apologize. I'm now doing rail, talking too fast. So if we're going away from, we now open a five. Am I fine? I apologize. Span of service. We now open a five. Our policy is open a five on Monday through Thursday and 7 a.m. on weekends, and we close at 12 or 3 a.m. If we change that, not only will come to you for approval, we will do the analysis. Same thing with coverage. Coverage is the second one that's on here. It's slightly different because we don't have a board policy on coverage. But if we are going to change how we presently do service, if we're going to open a new line, if we're going to close the station on weekends, or if we're going to change the public perception of what we are, which is our stations and when we open, then that will trigger the analysis. It again will come to you for approval. We'll do the analysis. We'll bring the analysis with you. The third one on the rail is frequency. We have a board adopted guideline on frequency. They're shown on the board 3 minutes, 6 minutes, and more than weekends. If we are to change that, we will trigger the analysis. Come to you for approval. We will bring that analysis when we come back with the recommendation. So we've done what the public has told us, is to keep it simple. We've based it on existing guidelines and policies that we have. And when we reviewed this to the public, they thought that was the right thing to do. So given what those service definitions are, I'll now turn it over to Sean for the analysis itself.
Thank you very much, Jim. Thanks, Madam Chair. We've talked thus far about, quote unquote, the analysis and what that is. And so you'll see the term on the board, the analysis is comprised of looking at whether or not a major service change or fare change has a disparate impact and or disproportionate burden on our riding community. What that essentially means is whether or not disparate impact means, does it impact minority populations more than non-minority populations? And disproportionate burden means, does it impact those that are low income more than those who are not low income? And so for the purposes of this walkthrough, I'm going to use the term DIDB, only because saying disparate impact and disproportionate burden is a mouthful over and over again. I'm likely to stumble over my own tongue. But just note that the thresholds that we are proposing as policy must be applied uniformly, regardless of mode, and they will be with us until our 2017 Title VI program. And so the importance of this is not only for the near-term decisions we have to make right now, but also they will carry forward, and that is per the guidance of FTA and the circular. And again, what we're asking you for today is your approval of these definitions, as well as how we've arrived at them. And so if we go to the next, if you could stay on the slide just for half a second. Go back one slide for me, please. Thank you very much. So I'm going to walk you through how we got there and the extent to which we followed, again, the guidance of the circular, which was to take into account public input, to examine our own system, to make sure we actually came up with a policy that was justified both by the official process and by the end of this, I hope that what you'll do is you'll be able to understand not only the service change methodology, but also the DIDB threshold methodology. Now we can go to the next slide. So there are four main pillars that support the policy that we're bringing forth to you today. First and foremost, extensive public outreach. We are fortunate enough to be able to not only interview our customers, but also conduct surveys of customers and ask our customers what they felt about the service changes as well as the thresholds for DIDB. We were able to conduct a review of 15 peer agencies and understand how they are moving to comply with the new guidance, and that's been summarized for you in the Q&A that was mailed out in advance. We were able to conduct an analysis not only of how we've done this before, but also look at the resources that we have here at Metro and determine how we can best use those resources going forward. And finally, we were able to actually, again, converse with our colleagues over at the FTA's Office of Civil Rights and determine whether or not they had a reaction, positive or negative, or in this case, constructive, in this case, they were able to help refine a methodology and approach which they appreciated and felt was on track. So I'll walk you through the public input first, because this is important. We were able to engage in a pretty significant public outreach effort. So we were able to meet with over 100 customers. We had an online survey. We got almost 400 responses back from our survey. And to summarize what our customers in our survey told us, the majority, actually nearly all of our customers, agreed with the thresholds that we were proposing for our service changes, which is good. And what we were also able to do, and this is very specific to DIDB, is we were able to propose for them thresholds and ask our customers what they felt about these thresholds in terms of whether or not a minority or low-income rider would be feeling, would be disproportionately affected. And we were able to test this in terms of actual percentages. So, for example, to ask in the survey whether a 5% difference was not equitable, whether a 10% difference was not equitable, whether a 15% difference was not equitable. And then to compile that information back and to distill down what our customers wanted to tell us about their own thresholds for what, in fact, would no longer be an equitable condition here at Metro. So that's the good news. We're able to distill all that down and incorporate that and use that as a guidepost in our analysis. We'll go to the next slide. What I will do is walk you through this chart, which you've seen in the base, between the public input we received as well as the examination of our peer agencies as well as an examination of our data. We propose the following rules for evaluating DIDB impacts on major service changes and fare policy. You can see this chart has a variety of percentages and a variety of numbers on the left-hand side. The way to interpret this is as follows. It turns out here at Metro, we have extremely good data that tells us at a very, very high level of accuracy. We have the margin of error for the survey data we collect on rail is 0.4%. The margin of error that we collect for the, our bus riders is 0.6%. So we know who our riders are. We can identify that down not just at the geographic level, but at the trip level. Because remember, some of our riders, they drive and park to our stations. Many of the geographies in which we are operating are very dynamic demographically, so they change. And we update this data regularly, or we have been updating it regularly. We will be updating it regularly going forward to be in compliance. And so what we learned is that for very large system changes, we can rely on a 5% differential threshold as a determinant of whether or not there is a DI or DB, an unequitable impact. And that, by the way, is consistent with the most equitable standards in the nation. So when we conducted our peer review, not only is that, again, the most equitable standard of the nation with regard to our peer agencies, but also, notably, it is where our public told us the threshold should be. So the public's input, as well as our peer review, as well as our own analysis of our data, led us in that direction. And the issue that we also wanted to explore was, how can we have a standard that is applicable at a system-wide level, but also flexible enough so that when we have to actually do our business and look at smaller service changes, we are not constrained or left with a standard that is very, very permissive at a large level, but very, very restrictive at a small level. So within our data, we are able to also understand that there's a margin of error as we get smaller and smaller samples. So we'll go back to this chart again. What this says is that if we're looking at, and let's go from the bottom up, almost a system-wide change, more than 40,000 riders impacted, we'll use that 5% threshold as the difference beyond which we would trigger, we would be having a DI or DB effect. as we look at fewer and fewer riders impacted, so 20 to 40,000 riders, we can add a margin of error into that percentage and use a 6% threshold. When we get all the way down to 10,000 riders as a small increment, we would use as high as 8%. And this is based upon an analysis. We actually ran over 200 hypothetical service changes to understand not only the applicability of this threshold, but also the extent to which that margin of error is grounded in the accuracy of our own data. So that is the standard that we are proposing for our use. With regard to fare policy change, we're proposing that we use a 5% difference in the average fare that a rider would pay. And so those two items we have shared with the FTA. They were able to help us refine this approach, and we're confident that this provides us not only a standard which gives us the most equitable transit system in the nation, but also the flexibility to execute our business model. And so if we go to the last slide, our recommendation is that the board approve our definitions, our proposed definitions for a major service change, as well as the policies by which we would evaluate potential disparate impact or disproportionate burden. Thank you, Madam Chair.
One of the things that came before the board the last time was why the board had to act by October. It is not clear that that has been transmitted back to the board. It is in the context, I understand, of the proposed mid-year bus changes. Can you verify that and talk about ways of managing that?
It is around the bus changes. One is the mid-year. Also, on the Dulles extension, even though the board has previously approved the bus changes there, because the local bus service has made some tweaks in their planning, there are some minor tweaks we have to make in ours, so we make sure all the potential customers are covered, so it covers those two areas. Our intention, as I recall, is to go to the, has to be the December board, right, Jack? To we have to go ahead in December to do this.
November
board for December changes. So that was why, that's why we had established the definitions so that we made sure we're.
Follow up on that?
Sure.
Yes.
I had wondered the same thing as to why we were taking this in pieces. Right. So I took it on myself to read the circular. And it states
always dangerous.
That all major service changes occurring on or after April 1, 2013 must be analyzed within the framework outlined in this circular. So if we want to do anything, we have to have these in place.
That's for this piece. The subsequent that Jim had outlined earlier, last time, the subsequent stages, if you were to get buy-in from the board, not as a prerequisite approval for something else that had to occur or to meet a statutory requirement or regulatory requirement. They were just getting buy-in as we go along before the board ultimately approves the policy.
If I could just follow up on that, is it your thought that any of the things we'd be doing in this mid-year, in fact, would be major service changes?
I think they some of these changes fall in this definition.
They
would. Yes.
Okay.
They do.
Yeah.
But a November action would still allow you to implement the bus changes in December?
You would. From a development of the schedule process, we start in the next week or so to put the schedules together for the December operator pick so that they can pick the new work. So our intentions are that we believe that we've worked through the public hearing process and that the changes are acceptable, especially the changes in Virginia, and that, we're planning on a November approval of the service changes and implementing those at the end of December. A delay in the actual definition approval is acceptable, but if we get into late November or even into December, it's going to be nearly impossible for us to make the service changes, take them back out. The thing that we could do is we could just run the current service starting in December for the next 6 months, but we'd still have about 7 service adjustments for the Dulles component that would not match up with the agreements that we have with the county and with Metro to try to provide the services that are necessary to service the rail line.
But it's not necessary for the board to address this at the October board meeting, then?
It would be helpful.
Be very helpful.
It would be helpful, but it's not
absolutely required, no, as long as.
Right, Jack?
It's not absolutely required, and, you know, but we would probably, I mean, unless there's some indication that there's a major concern, we'd like to go ahead and start planning for the service adjustments effective the end of December.
I just wanted to know what the ask was from the staff standpoint.
The ask really is to October.
To move forward.
To do it.
Yes. Yes. Okay, Mr. Volker.
But it could be done in November.
If there, yeah, if the board felt they needed more time.
The other, I will make one other and then I'll quit.
All right.
Do I understand on the rail service standards that anything other than the current rail schedule is a major service adjustment, even if it's 30 seconds or a minute on the rail schedule? Is that how I read that? I'm not sure if it was the intent, but is that the effect that on page 12?
Yes. If we change that, we come back to the board for approval anyway. So,
but you're saying that it requires a full public hearing process and review before the board gets it?
No. Remember, this doesn't change what the compact requires of us in terms of public hearings. The compact already requires public hearings for certain changes.
But, not, this, but I'll be frank with you, it does not require changes on the rail schedule of that minuscule set of changes because they have been taking place for the last 15 or 20 years about rail schedule adjustments. What you're talking about now is a public hearing requirement against the Title VI requirements. Maybe I'm misunderstanding this.
I'm sorry, don't mean to interrupt you, but it will not trigger a public hearing, but it does trigger public involvement process. It will solicit input from the public about what it is we're going to do. And that gets that feedback comes back to the analysis.
And what Jim is saying is that what it does trigger is it triggers a report. Essentially, that 30-second adjustment, the impact that has, that's different from what we do today, and the only difference is that we bring a report back to the board, which evaluates the extent to which that 30-second adjustment may or may not have an equity impact. And the board then, as part of the report that we bring back to the board, may have, as part of the report also, elements of mitigating factors that in that report will be analyzed. And the board can choose to act upon the report and the information that's given to the board. What this triggers that's different from today is a report that would, an equity analysis that we bring back to the board for evaluation.
Frankly, the board has delegated to the general manager the authority to make adjustments in rail scheduling on his own authority. Major changes obviously were intended to come back to the board, but any adjustment in rail schedule would require an analysis and report to the board in this process. Do I understand
frequency.
That?
Frequency. We're talking headways.
You're talking about frequency and headway changes. Yeah. So we're presently running everything we can on the red line. If we were to go from decrease the headway by a minute, we're talking about having an extra 12 train sets out there, an extra, you know, 60 cars out there. We would be coming to you long before that for a budget adjustment. 1 minute on a headway on a railroad is a big deal. And
I just want to make sure you all understand that this is a different process than the board had established, and it's a significant change. And if that's the intent of any change in rail schedule triggers this process of review.
And that's why I want to try to differentiate between rail schedule and headways. As Jim just pointed out, a one-minute change in headways is a significant change in capacity on the line. And I don't believe, I have to refresh myself, that I'm allowed to decrease headways below the standards established by the board without coming back to the board on headways. Not specific, you know, not one that particular train leaves the station, but on headways, because that affects the capacity.
And I thought the clarity of what we were doing here is that, one, when the public hearing would be triggered, and when the equity will be triggered every time we make a change. And the other is the reduction or something that makes a significant impact. And that's the public hearing. Yes.
And I assume when we talk about changes, these are permanent changes to the schedule, not something we had to do this week because
not for maintenance or construction or anything like that. Emergency.
Mr. Bolger, you have a question.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I mentioned this at our conference call. I'm glad to hear that you had a profound and productive meeting with the Federal Transit Administration Office of Civil Rights. I will state again publicly that if you haven't already, because this is very complicated stuff, get a letter acknowledging that great productive meeting, thanking them for their couple of 2 cents, and have something on the record that we can, that Rich can have and you all can have when and if they change their mind going forward, and when we submit this requirement under the guidance next year, because again, that lots of people change positions at Federal Transit Administration. Civil Rights Office has been beefed up over the last couple of years from the former administrations. There's been a lot more emphasis, and it'd be great to have something in the record that we could all look back on in case. And I'd hope, Rich, that something like that could go to Peter Rogoff, even though he's not at, maybe he's not at his desk, but it's as a way to get something in the file. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Hearing none. May I have a motion on the floor first for approval or recommendation, for the recommendation? Mr. Bolger has moved, and a second, please. I'll second it. I'll second the motion. And any further discussion? Okay. This is very important. I think we're moving forward on this, and it's coming to the board, and it will require, I think, a bit of clarity as we get to the board, so that the entire board has a understanding of this. All those in favor of the action that we move forward on the three recommendations provided on the service, and opposed. Thank you very much for the approval. The next item is the 7000 series rail car update. And Mr. Troop, you going to give us that one?
I will.
Thank you. And this is for information only.
Great. Thank you, and good afternoon. You know, I am really pleased to present the report on the current status of the 7K series rail car project. As can be seen in the chart, we have executed the base contract in three of the five options. The base contract and option one are for the 128 cars, which will support the increased Dulles service. A replacement of the 1000 series car, which was recommended by the NTSB, that has been exercised under option four and will receive 300 cars from that, exercising that option. Our 4000 series cars will be replaced under option three, and this accounts for 100 cars. And we do have the initial payments to exercise the expansion options two and option five, which are for 90 and 130 cars, respectively. That's currently part of the capital budget, but this will be executed in the mid-2015 timeframe. So where are we with all this? Well, after many, many months of preliminary engineering and submittal reviews, final engineering, the mock-ups, both the hard mock-ups and soft mock-ups, which you all have seen, quality manufacturing reviews, we are getting very close to delivery of four fully functional pilot cars, which are currently being manufactured in Lincoln, Nebraska. Now, these pilot cars were being manufactured concurrently in order to save schedule time with the prototypes, which were built in Japan, and the prototypes were built to demonstrate manufacturing techniques and car system testing. Now, the pilot cars are scheduled for delivery in December of this year, and will go undergo testing and acceptance, which should be approximately a six-month period. Acceptance testing allows for full-scale production to begin in Lincoln, and for Kawasaki to deliver 748 rail cars to us, 220 again, which will be expansion cars. The project is currently on schedule, and this is based on a revised schedule and deliveries, which was agreed to as a result of the tsunami, which occurred in Japan in March of 2011. Now, the test track at Greenbelt is about 4 to 6 months behind schedule, but will be completed in the mid to late 2014 timeframe. As a result, the pilot cars will be tested on the system during non-revenue and some revenue hours, but this will be manageable and will not impact the acceptance schedule at all. Final delivery of all cars, of all 748, will be December of 2018, and that puts us just about in the time frame for the development of the 8,000 series car.
Exciting.
So that's where we are.
Okay. And what percentage of the fleet is this, okay, by 2018?
This is about half of the, this is about half the fleet. Yeah, yeah. A little bit more than half the fleet. Yeah, we have 1104, so it's a little bit more.
Any questions?
Yeah, quick question. Mm-hmm. On the options that we have not yet exercised, are those contingent on a new capital program agreement?
Yes.
Yes. So mm-hmm. people want that extra bunch of cars, they've got to sign up for a new agreement. Yes.
Yes. Hearing no other questions, this is an information item, so this was a good update. Is there any other matters to come before the customer service network?
I just have one question or observation. On the advance agenda for this committee, it mm-hmm. still shows the item on automatic train control independent report as an April item on this committee. I would prefer to see that on the safety committee.
Oh, okay. You did mention that.
Or jointly, or whatever.
We probably could be first. Staff would simply make the adjustments for us, please. We can leave it for, I think, the customer service, but we should get to the safety. Okay.
And I wanted to, Madam Chair, if I could, I wanted to follow up on the chairwoman's interest in the board's opportunity to take a tour of phase one in a timely fashion so that it's not on opening day.
We guarantee it will not be opening day. It will be far enough in advance of opening day that we will be very comfortable with it. That's, I think.
Check it out for us.
Okay. Hearing no other business.
I've been already.
Hearing no other business, we're adjourned then. Thank you very much for the presentation.
I would ask the board members over here to move next door.
Oh, that's right.
We have items that we need to confirm.
American Society of Civil Engineers. Oh. I didn't get a chance to ride the Charlotte light rail, but I did see it. It went right under the